Hi there. This week, I am going to break down the Breonna Taylor case, talking through the timeline of what happened, what these no-knock search warrants mean, if there is criminal liability here for the police officers, what has happened since, and what is likely to happen in the future based on the information we have today. I asked you guys on Instagram if you were interested in a breakdown of this case, and you said that you were. If you don't follow me yet on Instagram, at the Emily D. Baker, so you don't miss anything. And with that, let's get into it. Hey there, this is Get Legit Law and Shit, and I'm Emily D. Baker, badass lawyer for online business. I've been a licensed attorney for over 15 years, and I'm a former prosecutor. So yeah, I know some shit. And we're going to talk about the legal shit you need to know. But don't worry, this is not another boring business podcast. So let's get started. Hi, friends. This case is undeniably tragic. And like so many other cases, it is frustrating sometimes and hard to understand how, when someone is killed in their home after midnight, there aren't people in jail over it. And I completely understand that frustration. When we are dealing with killings in the line of duty, when police officers are lawfully executing their duties, the rules that apply are, well, specific, for one. And don't always apply the same way. You would think if someone came into your house and shot you that they would end up in jail, and that would be a correct assumption. So it's understandable that the frustration surrounding police-involved shootings are what they are. That said, given the circumstances of this case, these officers may not end up being arrested. They might not all lose their jobs. And we're going to talk about why that is. That's in no way to minimize the death of any person, to minimize the death of Breonna Taylor, or to sanction what happened. It is meant to explain. And the frustration in a lot of cases like this comes out of a lack of understanding. And when you don't understand why you see something and you're like, this looks wrong, why isn't something being done? It's very, very frustrating. In the two episodes about the George Floyd case, I talk about how long these investigations can take. In the Minnesota case that I explored in the second podcast regarding George Floyd's killing, that case took almost a year to file and bring charges. And that would be more in line with what I have seen in the few cases where officers are charged for on-duty related killings. So with that, let's talk about the timeline of what happened. As always, the news articles that I have referenced are linked in the show notes. Everything I talk about is coming from publicly available resources. I have not been able to find anywhere the search warrant affidavit, though I am very curious to read it, and I will talk about what a search warrant affidavit is. I am sure that most of you are not super well versed in search warrants, and that's completely okay because you don't need to be. In my time as a district attorney, I did work on search warrant duty where we would evaluate search warrants before they went to judges for approval, and I'll be talking about search warrants and, you know, what that entails, what the laws are around that as we get into this. I've also, of course, argued the validity or invalidity. I normally wasn't arguing the invalidity of search warrants in court. Sometimes you have to concede. But I wasn't arguing the invalidity of search warrants in court, but arguing the validity of search warrants in court, upholding them, evaluating them. This is something that I worked with quite frequently, as most district attorneys do. As we are sitting here today, it is the end of June. This has been several months now since this happened. On March 12th, the police obtained the nighttime service no-knock search warrant to search Breonna Taylor's apartment in connection with a drug investigation. The target of that drug investigation was Breonna Taylor's ex-boyfriend, Jamarcus Glover. Now, what a nighttime service no-knock search warrant means is that the officers can serve the search warrant at night and they don't have to knock. Normally, there is a knock and announce requirement. In some cases, knock and announce can either allow time for destruction of evidence, allow time for people to arm themselves if there is a significant concern that there might be weapons at the location or a history of weapons at the location. There is not in this case, but giving you some background on why no-knock warrants might be used, it's worth noting that in this case, they were serving simultaneous search warrants on multiple locations, which also is a reason a no-knock warrant might be used, especially and particularly in a drug investigation if they are hitting multiple locations at once. I was involved in prosecuting. I was not involved in the investigation. I didn't do that part. In the prosecution of a case where 43, if memory serves, search warrants were served simultaneously. And those were nighttime service no-knock warrants. The thought in those warrants being that you don't want one location to alert other locations that warrants are going down just in case one location is being served slightly later than others. The goal of those warrants is to catch people unaware so that police can't be ambushed and the like. But no-knock warrants can be dangerous for officers because of exactly what you saw here. People can believe that someone's breaking into their home because someone is breaking down the door and they don't know who they are. They're not required to knock and announce before they enter the location. In this case, the police are saying that they did announce. They broke down the door with a battering ram. So it was clear that Breonna Taylor and her boyfriend, who was in the location, knew that someone was coming into the home. The police say that they announced that they were police. It should be noted that they were plain clothes, so they weren't in, you know, uniforms that said police on the front or on the back. It didn't say that they were wearing raid jackets that would have, you know, the big letters written police to clearly identify them. It said in all of the reports of this that they were plain clothes officers, meaning they would be dressed in, I mean, these are narcotics officers, and not to stereotype, but they would be dressed in some kind of a cargo jean and some kind of a shirt, flannel, or the like, based on my personal experience. So there are plainclothes officers, four of them at the location, using a battering ram, breaking down the door based on the no-knock warrant. They say they announced that they were police. Neighbors in the area say they didn't hear that. All of this is going down around 12:40 at night. For warrants, the police must present to a judge that they have probable cause to search the location to find the thing that they are trying to find, evidence of a crime, something to solve a crime, narcotics, those sorts of things, you know, illegal shit. The Fourth Amendment of the Constitution protects against unreasonable searches and seizures. That is why there's this procedure that the police must obtain a warrant. It must be signed off by a judge. So the judge reviews the probable cause statement, the search warrant affidavit for sufficiency and for probable cause, saying, oh, this is why you think this shit is at that location or that this person has it, or, hey, this car is connected with that thing, those types of things. Then you have officers serving the warrant, not always the same officers that obtained the warrant. And if the officers are relying in good faith on the warrant, even if the warrant is wrong in some ways, the officers are still lawfully performing their duty of executing a search warrant. So you see this happen from time to time, and it is always tragic when officers have a wrong apartment number on it, or doors aren't clearly marked with apartment A, apartment B, apartment 1, apartment 2. Those types of things. And it does happen that the targeted warrant location is the incorrect location. That didn't happen in this case. All of the news reports that I have seen break down that the address was Breonna Taylor's address. I have seen on social media and some articles indicating that perhaps the target of the investigation was arrested prior to this warrant being served. But based on the information that these were simultaneous warrants, that means they would have been simultaneous. So even if the target of the warrant was arrested that night, it didn't seem that they were expecting to find the target, Jamarcus Glover, at this location. Based on the reporting, it seems that they were expecting to find evidence that he was stashing there. It looks like police believed that Jamarcus Glover was using Breonna Taylor's address as a location to have narcotics shipped to, delivered to, or left at. The attorney for Taylor's family said that Taylor had previously dated Glover, but that was 2 years prior to this incident, and they maintained a more passive friendship. So they're acquaintances at this point who were formerly involved. So there is a tangential connection between the target of these search warrants and Breonna Taylor and her apartment. According to the affidavit, according to news reports, Glover used Taylor's apartment as his own home address. Police state in the arrest warrant, according to news reports, that they verified with U.S. postal inspectors. By the way, their acronym is USPIS, which, as a DA, always made me giggle when the email address was at USPIS. I still think it's funny. I'm sorry if you're a U.S. postal inspector. I worked with lots of lovely U.S. postal inspectors prosecuting near a very major airport where packages would frequently travel. Mailing illegal shit through the mail, by the way, not okay. There's a whole service that investigates that kind of stuff. However, the U.S. Postal Inspector has come out since and stated that this police department did not verify with him. So there is at least conflicting news reports regarding the validity of that information that brought the police to Breonna Taylor's address. If there is no tangential connection to her address, the police should not have been there. Does that go to a criminal case? Some. It goes more towards a wrongful death suit against the individual officers and against the department and against the officer that wrote the search warrant. The officers who are executing the warrant in good faith are relying on a warrant. If that warrant is found to have falsified information that the officers could not have known and it can't be shown that the officers knew it, it's a different situation. But that is one of the aspects of this case that I will be keeping an eye on, because if there's not that relationship between the location and the target of the investigation, the police should not have been there. However, I've seen it reported, though very few reports, that there was surveillance of the target of the investigation picking up things from the target address, Breonna Taylor's apartment, and taking them back to one of the main locations in this larger investigation and larger search warrant operation. So there seems to be multiple pieces of evidence connecting it. Again, I haven't seen the search warrant affidavit, but there seem to be multiple pieces based on reports that tie this individual who is suspected of running narcotics to Breonna Taylor's apartment. Not her boyfriend, but the ex who's potentially dropping stuff off, leaving stuff there, or using her address because it's removed from all of the other locations, you know, distributing it so it's less likely that he will have everything in one place or get caught with everything in one place, which is not uncommon, and not uncommon in a narcotics investigation to have multiple target locations. Kind of the same reason that Amazon doesn't just have one main shipping center. They have distributed shipping centers. So if any line of shipment goes down, you've got other shipping and distribution centers. I mean, it's basically just decentralizing your supply at that point. So the search warrant's obtained on March 12th. The search warrant is served after midnight on March 13th. They serve four warrants, plainclothes officers, Breonna Taylor's boyfriend, Kenneth Walker, who lawfully has a firearm in their residence, shoots at the officers as the door is knocked down and police return fire. There are disparate reports on how many rounds. It is clear that it is somewhere between 15 and 22 rounds that were shot into the location, and she was hit 8 times and died in her hallway. The 911 information that's been released said that Walker called the 911 dispatch distraught, saying someone kicked in the door and shot my girlfriend. He gave a statement to police that had subsequently been released, well, parts of it were subsequently released, saying that he and Brianna were watching a movie in bed. He heard a loud bang. It scared both of them. They were concerned that it might have been the former boyfriend. They screamed out, "Who is it?" He reported that Brianna screamed, "Who is it? Who is it?" and that he was scared to death. I imagine the sound of a battering ram on your front door would be fucking terrifying. He described Brianna Taylor as screaming at the top of her lungs, "Who is it?" and not hearing a response, that the door came off the hinges and he fired one shot. We know that that shot hit an officer in the leg and then fire was returned. I will talk about the officer that was terminated more close in time as we get through the timeline of what went down. But one of the officers that fired into the apartment has since been terminated. And we will get to that. And that is, when you serve a no-knock warrant, this is part of the risk. From the perspective of the boyfriend, he legally possessed a gun. He's in a state where you can stand your ground, which means you don't have to retreat. If somebody's breaking into your home, you can shoot them. I don't have any problem with those laws. And this is where you have a state with a stand your ground law and the ability to serve a no-knock warrant. And I think that puts officers at risk because you know that citizens are allowed to be armed in their homes and they have a right to shoot you if you're coming through the door. The officers, based on this warrant, also have a right to break down the door and go in and legally have a right to return fire once they are fired upon. So the laws in this state put these two things at odds and create a very dangerous situation. The state has since outlawed no-knock warrants because of this case. And I completely understand why they did. Though I also understand why police use no-knock warrants in particular circumstances. And at some point as a country, we have to decide, we really have to decide, how much do we really give a shit about drugs at this point? Like, is this worth it for a narcotics investigation? And this is a national and a state level discussion. How much do we care about busting down drug rings in the middle of the night? And that is a wider conversation that needs to happen because a lot of the investigations I see like this are drug rings. And some people are like, you know what? Can we just not? I'm sure if this was a sex trafficking ring, people would feel different about it. But Brianna Taylor and her ex-boyfriend would all not be involved in this case. So there are levels of crimes, and discussing nationally and on a state level how those crimes are investigated and prosecuted, and honestly, what we give more of a shit about. Because this puts everyone's life in danger, not just the officers, but the officers and the civilians. So at some point, a larger conversation needs to be had. Like, I know we're all with the drugs are bad, but I also feel like there's enough information out there that you know meth can fucking kill you. And if you choose to do it anyway, that's kind of on you. Like, let's let people accept responsibility for their shit choices. And if you're not hurting anyone while you're doing it, you're not driving and killing people, maybe we just let you do drugs, and if you die, you die because you've done the drugs. I couldn't find any reports about what type of narcotics investigation this was. And does that matter at the end of the day for Brianna Taylor's family and loved ones? No. But are my feelings different if this is a marijuana investigation than if this is a very large scale meth operation where they're like selling to junior high school kids? Yeah, probably. So I would like to know more information, and maybe at some point we will. I have spiraled into ranting about drug laws, and while there are larger issues of drug cartels and organized crime and drug running and the danger that comes along with it, there are also issues of how much do we care about the war on drugs? And can we have a conversation about that? Because if we're going to do no-knock warrants and the such, we need to really know that what we're sending our police officers into fight is worth being fought. And if it's worth being fought, then we all accept that there can be tragic cases like this that are essentially collateral damage to the war on drugs. And that's a conversation that needs to be had. That doesn't help Breonna Taylor's friends and family. Absolutely not. But going forward, it's a conversation. So after this, as one can imagine, or maybe not, if you're not in the criminal justice system, Kenneth Walker, the boyfriend who shot at police who were coming through his door, was arrested on charges of attempted murder of a peace officer. On March 26th, a judge, Judge Stevens, released him from jail to home confinement because of mostly coronavirus. There are, I think it was also due to public outcry, but this is common right now with coronavirus, keeping people out of centralized confinement or out of the central jails to keep coronavirus cases lower. And because when people are coming back to court and they have corona, it just spreads within the courts. It spreads within the courthouses. It can spread within the agencies. And it is definitely an issue. So I think it was both. Both corona allowed the circumstance to happen, but I also think that the judge was probably horrified that all of this was going down and the public outcry was ramping up. And the boyfriend, who thought people were breaking into his home and didn't kill anyone, was sitting in custody while Breonna Taylor was dead and no one was in custody for that. So I think there might have been a little bit of an equitable evaluation on the judge's part. Whether that is right or wrong, I will keep to myself. The police union in Louisville did not appreciate it and released a statement saying that the decision to release Walker was a slap in the face to everyone wearing a badge and has endangered the public. Look, here's the thing. From all the news that has come out about Walker, the boyfriend, he does not have a record. He was not acting in a reckless way. He thought that people were breaking into his house. He had a properly licensed firearm, and the laws in his state allow him to stand his ground and fire at somebody coming into his house. So is he a threat to the public? I'm going to go with no in those circumstances. And in home confinement, you know where he's going to be. He doesn't have the history that you would want to see. I can see the argument for releasing him. I can see why the police would be upset. He fired once. And under the circumstances, if those facts went to trial, his self-defense defense is legit. So I can completely understand a judge releasing him. And actually, after that, the attorney dismissed the case against Kenneth Walker and the charges against him for firing at the officers. One, I think that was out of respect for the public outcry. Two, I think it's because the self-defense in that case is so strong. And if the prosecutors listened to the 911 call and heard genuine terror that people were breaking into the home, which I would imagine, given the news reports we've seen on that 911 call, they could hear that he wasn't aware that it was the police coming into his house, that he genuinely believed that someone was breaking into his home. And that's not an unreasonable belief, seeing that that's what was happening. So I'm not, there are things that offend me. That does not offend me. I think that it was, in light of all the circumstances, the right call to dismiss that case. People are calling for it to be dismissed with prejudice. Right now, it is dismissed without prejudice, meaning that if the attorneys wanted to refile it, if the prosecutors wanted to refile it, they could. I don't know if they will make that decision at this point. I don't know if they need to, because the investigation into the officers' actions need to happen. So we get to June 11th, and Breonna's law is passed, which outlaws no-knock warrants in the state and also requires body cams to be turned on before, at least 5 minutes before, and then at least 5 minutes after every search warrant is served. That's not something that in their department in Louisville Metro Police was regularly done. And the plainclothes officers that were involved in serving the search warrant that resulted in Breonna Taylor's death did not have body cameras. So if there had been body cameras, you would have heard whether the officers announced or not. You would have heard what they were saying. You would have heard what Breonna Taylor said, you would have heard what her boyfriend said, and then there would have been a more clear view. Right now, you have conflicting stories. And at some point, the investigation should shake out what happened, or to the best of their ability, what happened. The initial investigation found that one of the officers violated procedure. It's very clear that there are political differences happening between the Metro Police Department, the mayor, and the politicians in Louisville. There are news reports that the city attorney is reminding the mayor that he can't just fire all the police officers without cause. And that's true, because then the city will get sued by the officers. I'm sure that the city attorney that is having to do this is saying, I understand that you're mad, and I understand that it seems unfair, and I understand that it is horrible and tragic. However, at some point, our city has to recover from this, and to have the amount of money needed to recover from this, you cannot have these four officers rightfully sue the department for wrongful termination under the rules as they stand now, which means that the politicians have to change the rules. So the politicians and the police union have to move forward and change things. But that is not going to change what happens to the officers in this case. It will change things going forward. So if the mayor doesn't like the protections for police officers that are acting in the line of their job, then it's the role of the politicians in Louisville to change those rules alongside with the police union. The one officer that was terminated shot 10 times through the window and through the door. The procedures for using lethal force include, for this department, a line of sight. So the officer couldn't fire in a reactive way to just the one gunshot because he couldn't see. There were, you know, you've got four police officers at a regular sized doorway with a door that's not all the way down yet, based on both sides of the report. The boyfriend said the door was coming off the hinges and he shot. The one officer's hit in the leg and the door is going down. So not all four officers would have had a clear line of sight into the apartment from the doorway. And you can't shoot across the other officers. So shooting through a blocked window is outside of policy. And they determined in their internal investigation that that officer should not have shot in that way. Whether or not they determined that that officer was the one responsible for striking Breonna Taylor is unclear at this time. But the FBI has taken up this investigation to make sure that there will be a fair and impartial investigation into what happened in this case. The detective who wrote the search warrant affidavit has resigned. The police chief has resigned. So people have left their post over this. I'm not surprised by that. It seems, based on reporting, that Louisville has been at odds with its police department for some time. And this is not the first instance where the community has been outraged with actions of this department. So what I would have liked to have seen is the police chief stand behind the officers. But if the police chief was part of whatever went down with the detective who may have, at this point, it looks like may have fabricated some of the facts in the affidavit, then it's completely proper for the chief of police to step down. It's completely proper for that detective to step down. I would hate to see them step down over a fear of taking heat over this. If the facts in the affidavit were true, and if the officers were relying in good faith on that affidavit and on that search warrant, which it seems that they were, then this is not unlawful. It's tragic. But the actions of officers returning fire when fired upon, when serving a valid search warrant, aren't unlawful. So if it's not an unlawful warrant, if the officers weren't doing anything improper, then a chief needs to stand behind his officers and work with the community to make the changes that they want to see. And that is what leadership looks like in the wake of a horrible tragedy in your community. You have to stand up and you have to do better. And you have to support both your officers and your community and find a way to work together. I will be very interested to see what the FBI uncovers in this case. I am very curious as to what's in that affidavit and into what other evidence there is tying this location to the target of the narcotics offenses. So did they see him go to Breonna Taylor's apartment once? Was he there four times a week picking things up? What was the reason to believe that he was using her apartment as an outpost? And how much of that information was in the search warrant? What was in the other search warrants? And this is all what the FBI will look at. What is in all these search warrants? What's the surveillance that the officers have? What did the U.S. Postal Inspection Service say or not? U.S. Postal Inspectors, the USPIS, what did they say or not say? And if they did not say, and it's in the affidavit, I have a huge fucking problem with it. And those are the things that need to be uncovered. The FBI getting involved will hopefully bring some transparency to this. I don't anticipate seeing a criminal prosecution of all of the officers involved. I do anticipate that there will be a civil wrongful death suit against the officers in the department. I do expect that we will see some very public and transparent findings at some point from the FBI and go from there. But if the officers who served the warrant were acting in good faith reliance on that warrant and returned fire after being fired upon, it's tragic, but it's not illegal. And the people calling for justice for Breonna Taylor are going to need to look in the direction of change and not in the direction of necessarily retribution, because the criminal justice system as it stands doesn't support prosecuting those officers on the information that we currently have, which means change into the way the department is structured, change in the ways an officer can be fired. Those types of change are what people within the community need to be discussing with their political leaders if that's what they want to see. But they also need to be aware that officers' unions will stand up for on-duty protections when officers are going into life and death situations. And that's not inappropriate. As a country, we have to start to decide community by community what type of policing matters to us. I have seen neighborhoods that have been held hostage essentially by drug trade. The case I referenced earlier that had 40 plus search warrants served all at once was pulling an entire community out from underneath a very active cocaine trade. And the videos that I saw of surveillance of hand-to-hand transactions often occurred at 3 o'clock in the afternoon. As kids were walking home from school, there were a number of photos of people selling on the street while kids were walking by. That puts an entire community at risk. So there are conversations that need to happen about what communities will tolerate, what they won't tolerate, prosecution of drug crimes, non-prosecution of drug crimes, if weed should just be legal everywhere. And we can at least knock that one off and worry about things that are way more dangerous. Those are conversations that need to have, along with the rules that go with engagement for police officers. And that conversation has to keep in consideration the danger of their job, given the fact that people do fire on them at work. These are hard conversations. They are valid conversations. None of that will erase this tragedy. None of this will make Breonna Taylor's family and loved ones feel better. None of this will bring her back. But conversations moving forward can at least help communities be clear on what they want and hopefully what some of the pros and cons of that are. If you start looking at crime statistics right now in Baltimore, Maryland, in Chicago, you will see that as police have stepped back in the wake of the George Floyd case, that murder rates have gone up. And Chicago and Baltimore have both seen some of the most violent months that they've had. on record in 5, 6, 7, 10 years. And you're getting, at least in Baltimore, in May, there were 35 homicides. In June, there's been over 27 homicides. So these are the conversations that have to have both sides. It has to be the, yes, the outrage for a tragedy like Breonna Taylor's, but also the realization that sometimes communities have to have policing if they expect to see their crime rates staying low. And those are, as I said, difficult, difficult conversations to have, but they're conversation that needs to be had. And it's clearly time to reevaluate as a whole and as communities, the values and what we want for our communities. And if communities want to tolerate drug dealing within their community or not, and what lengths they want their law enforcement to go to keep their communities from that being a, you know, facet of their community. Or do you want to be California and Denver, where it's like, hey, if you need weed, you can just, there's a delivery service and there's a place you can go. And you don't need to go to a dealer on the street. You can just make it happen. And whether that's the model. So it will be interesting to see where we go from here. And I'm hopeful that the conversations will continue to happen. I don't think the calls for the police to be wholesale defunded are practical or reasonable. But I do think that there is a lot of room for how communities would like to see policing in their communities. And I hope that people get involved on the local level with what happens. Talk to your city councils. Know who your police chief is. Act locally to shape your community the way that you want it to be. It is your right to do so, and no one should tell you not to. You have the right to make your voice heard. You have the right to tell your local leaders how you want to see your community handled. And I hope that you do. I'm here if you ever have questions. These are the community conversations that we have in the Get Legit community Facebook group and in my DMs, because I've had a lot of people DM me lately on Instagram saying, I don't want to ask on the internet and get flamed, but can you explain this? I will never come from a place of judgment if you come to me with a question. I will always try to explain things to the best of my knowledge, information, and coming from my own perspective. I always tell you guys where I stand in my perspective. And when I see both sides, I try to explain both sides the best that I am able to. So I am here to continue the conversation and support, because I understand how frustrating it is to see things happening and you're going, I just don't understand why this is the way this is. It doesn't feel right. And I hear you. And I'm here for you. At the Emily D. Baker on social, the Get Legit Community Facebook group on Facebook. And I will talk to you soon. Thanks for sticking around for today's episode. In the month of July, I will be sharing with you some episodes of other people's podcasts that I've been on, The OPP, while I am with my family for a little bit of a summer break. You know, it's been a weird year with COVID. Schools have been out and my kids are ready, ready for a little bit of a break and ready for me to take a bit of a break with them. I can't wait to be back with you with live episodes. And if you want to keep up with what I'm doing and what I'm talking about, The Emily D. Baker on Instagram and The Get Legit Community on Facebook are the best place to keep up with the real-time breakdown of what's happening, my impressions of it, and of course, keeping you up to date with the things that are happening in the world around us. I hope that you join me there, and I look forward to being back in August.